Miriam of Nazareth, if we are honest, appears delusional. He has done great things for me. She's an unwed, pregnant, young woman. His mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. Her country is occupied by a brutal Roman army filled with legionnaires who have no hesitance to rape non-citizens who are their subjects, and no accountability if they do. Scattered the proud with their conceit? Herod Antipas was the tetrarch of Judea, accountable to the Emperor Augustus. You know him from his role in the death of John the Baptist by beheading. And he reigned for 42 years. Brought down the powerful from their thrones, lifted up the lowly, filled the hungry with good things? On what planet? Miriam of Nazareth seems deluded. And for us too, God's promises of peace and joy can seem far away. Corruption is rampant. Have you been following the indictments? Inequality is everywhere. Real wages for workers in America have been flat or declining since 1979. Do you feel that? So-called militarist strongmen are in power all over the globe. Putin, Orban, Erdogan. Corporations rule the airwaves and exploit us. Between the military and the shopping mall, we're taxed and we spend and we die. But be not afraid. Peace and joy are gestating. Peace is being born among us. Peace is coming with joy. Last Sunday, Pastor Bridget contrasted for us the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, versus the Pax Christi, the peace of Christ. Pax Romana, violent power or force, is very different from birthing power or gestation, the power of the peace of Christ, isn't it? And given the option between the Pax Romana and its force and the Pax Christi, if it comes down to a fight, we think we know which one we're going to trust, don't we? And yet the late Oxford philosopher Grace Jansen suggested in a series of books that in fact our trust in violent power and force, thinking that force is power, is actually a kind of necrophilia. When we trust in force and violence, we trust in death. Jansen writes, "An emphasis on violence and death comes at the expense of the physical body in the present and brings with it a denigration of the senses, sexuality and sensuality, and thus establishes a yearning for mystical worlds beyond the here and now." Trauma, in other words, turns us inward to fantasy, away from the body and its fragile, yet material and therefore indestructible reality. In contrast to necrophilia, gross word, isn't it? Jansen suggests we consider birthing power. And there is a power in giving birth, isn't there? I can't claim to have experienced that power directly. But I was present at the birth of all three of our children, and I can tell you there's power in birthing for sure. I remember particularly vividly the birth of our third child, our daughter, Rhianne, who celebrated her 26th birthday this past Wednesday, December 12th. My wife Lisa and I had hosted the main course for a progressive dinner for theology majors at Valparaiso, where I was teaching at the time. We'd had about 40 people over at our home, and then we had ended up the night at my colleague Betty DeBerg's home for dessert. And on the way from Betty's, as we were driving, the 10-minute drive or so, Lisa mentioned to me that she was having some contractions. But this was our third child, so we went to sleep without too much concern. About 5 a.m., Lisa awakened me, saying, "John, I think this is it. I'm having pretty intense back contractions. I think we should go to the hospital." Now, I was an old pro at this giving birth thing. So while Lisa went into the kitchen on her way to the garage, I stopped off in the bathroom. I washed my face, brushed my teeth, and was combing my hair. I had a lot of it at the time. When all of a sudden, I heard this groaning from the kitchen. I turned my head, dropped the comb, and I discovered the source of the groaning was my wife laying in the fetal position on the floor of the kitchen. I whisked her into the back seat of our minivan, and off we went to Porter Memorial Hospital. My mother-in-law happened to be staying with us, thank God, so our boys were taken care of. I broke a few speed limits on the way to the hospital, and Lisa groaned in the back seat the entire 10-minute drive. I pulled into the ER lot and sprinted into the lobby through the double doors. "My wife's in severe labor in the car. Come right away," I told the nurse on duty. "Bring a wheelchair." I sprinted back out to the car. The nurse had heard this story before. She took her time. I joke later that she stopped to have a cigarette on the way. When she reached the van, Lisa was really agitated. We managed to get her into the wheelchair, but as we were walking through the first set of doors into the emergency room, she stood up in the wheelchair and exclaimed, "The baby's coming! The baby's coming!" The nurse, not exactly in tune with the circumstances, shouted, "No! We have to go to the delivery room!" She tried pushing down on Lisa's shoulders so firmly that her shoulders were bruised. But I knew my wife would not tell a lie. So I had sprinted around to the front of the wheelchair. Lisa again arched her back, and as she was wheeled into the lobby of the emergency room, she delivered our 5-pound, 3-ounce daughter into the leg of her pink sweatpants. I was there to catch the little squid. I joke later that I've made tougher catches in my life, but none more important. Lisa propped her legs up on the footrests of the wheelchair, and we somehow managed, with me still holding Rhianne in my hands through the sweatpants, to wheel her into one of the ER prep rooms. We then pulled Lisa's sweatpants down, and there was my daughter. I was the first to hold her in my hands. The nurse asked Lisa, she said, "Do you think you can climb up on the gurney?" We both looked at her like she was nuts. I just gave birth, Lisa said. Oh, the nurse went on. Oh. Another nurse had shown up by this time and had a little blue syringe. Rhianne wasn't breathing yet. She was kind of blue. But she took the syringe and cleared her nose. And my daughter took her first breath. We managed to hoist Lisa up onto the gurney. Meanwhile, me holding on to my daughter. I held her there for about 10 minutes as she breathed her first breaths and gradually turned a beautiful, delightful pink. And then the doctor showed up, snipped the umbilical cord, and sent us a bill for $12,000. Seriously, it was an amazing experience. It's a cliche to call it a miracle, but that is how it felt. Later that morning, as I drove home to check on the boys and tell them the good news that they had a baby sister, while I was stopped at a red light, I held my hands over my head in the Rocky pose and simply shouted, "Woo-hoo!" Is there power in that experience? I think that's the kind of power that Mary's song, the Magnificat, reveals to us. Birthing power, a gestating peace, God's peace that can't be stopped, even and perhaps especially by a military empire. Mary's song is a revolutionary's song. Listen to what she sings again. God's arm has shown strength, scattering the proud in the thoughts of their heart. God has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. God has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. This is Mary's vision based upon what she felt gestating in her womb. It is a vision of justice. It is a vision where the people who suffer occupation experience peace. A few years ago, I was speaking at a conference at the Arab American University in Jenin, in Palestine. The day after my talk, a group of us from the conference were invited by one of our hosts, a young woman by the name of Wana Hanfi, to tour Jenin with her. Wana Hanfi was a recent graduate of the school's Peace Studies program, the first peace studies program in Palestine. She had grown up in Jenin and lived through the Second Intifada in April 2002. Here's where the tanks were parked as they lobbed shells down on us, she calmly reported as we stood on an embankment high above the city of Jenin. And as we moved down into the city, she said, here's where the armored bulldozers came through the streets, flattening everything in their path. As we stood in a narrow alley lined with three-story apartment buildings that had since been rebuilt. Now, such an experience, not unlike the experience of military force that Mary lived under during the Roman Empire, might have turned a person bitter, angry, resentful. But Wana Hanfi, like Mary, found power from her oppression. She chose life. And that is a subversive choice. Mary chose life. She wasn't delusional. She chose a different path than military force, a different kind of power. Real power. And in living peace like she did, she found joy and she sings. And so can we. A gestating peace is like that. It's like the power of water, which, while seemingly gentle and placid, can become a torrent of power washing everything away. Gestating peace is like that. It's like the power of song, the power of music, voices lifted together in protest, in solidarity, in triumph. A gestating peace is like that. It's like the power of sisterhood, Mary and Elizabeth in solidarity and refusing to accept the terms of empire. And yet, I'm almost done. We know how this story ends, don't we? And it doesn't seem like a happy ending. Mary's baby, Jesus, hangs on a cross. A 7-year-old girl dies in a detention camp. And his mother is there. Her father is there, watching the humiliation and death. Feminist theologian Elizabeth Johnson, in a book about Mary entitled Truly Our Sister, puts it this way. The accounts of Mary witnessing the crucifixion reveal to us how, and I quote, life given by women's bodies keeps on being taken away by brutality, war, and terrorism. And yet, we have this revolutionary song. We have this gospel story. We are still singing songs about Jesus and Mary. And who remembers the Legionnaires anymore? So I guess that means it's up to us to choose two. We can choose death, destruction, despair, or we can choose hope, peace, and joy. God offers us the power of a gestating peace. So let's choose that power together, shall we? And so let's sing. One opportunity tomorrow night is the Alloway Village Band concert at 7 p.m. at the Widener Center. Some of us will be there. And at the same time and in the same spirit, we'll gather right here at 7 p.m. tomorrow for a jazz Christmas at Union. I promise that service will bring you a smile, the sign of joy. And maybe next year we can get the Alloway Band here, or at least coordinate our timing. In any event, you have a choice of beautiful events for tomorrow to hear anew Mary's song. And just like Mary had a choice about how to respond to the oppression that was all around her, we have a choice before us too. Every day, in every way, we can choose God's way. We can choose life. And now, we can sing. Amen.